final case on the docket this morning is American Legacy Foundation, Robert Miller, David Weinman, versus Kevin Boyce, Treasurer of the State, State of Ohio, and Robert Miller, etc. Chief Justice Brown and Justice Cupp have both recused, and we're pleased to have in their place Judge Sean Gallagher from the 8th District and Judge Bill Harshif from the 4th District. Mr. Geiger.
Thank you, Justice Pfeiffer. Good morning. It is my privilege today to appear on behalf of Mr. Robert Miller, Jr. of Toledo, Mr. David Weinman of Cleveland, both who are seated in the third row, both of whom got up at 4 a.m. this morning, as I suspect other members of the court may have had to do to travel here. In addition, I am privileged to represent the American Legacy Foundation, which was established by the Master Settlement Fund of the tobacco litigation, is made up of prominent public officials, a majority of its board being elected public officials, including two attorneys general of states of our country. Ellen Vargas is seated in the third row as well, representing the foundation. She is the general counsel. If it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You'll watch your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to focus on what I believe to be the nub issue that the court will have to resolve. Our time is short, so I'll get right to the point. The issue in this case is, did Senate Bill 192, as adopted by the 123rd General Assembly in year 2000, create a vested equitable trust estate in the monies appropriated to and actually dispersed to the Endowment Fund of the Tobacco Use Prevention and Control Foundation? If such a vested trust estate arose, there appears to be no dispute in the voluminous briefs presented to the court that if that vested right existed in those monies for those trust beneficiaries, that the retroactivity clause, and we contend the contracts clause of the Ohio Constitution, preclude later legislation undoing the funding of that trust.
Counsel, I did not see in your brief, but I saw in others, did the foundation, is that the proper term?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. The foundation was established by statute, has subsequently been eliminated.
Did it try to walk back the contract that it entered into a few days after it entered into it?
No, Your Honor. On April 4th of 2008, the foundation did, in fact, authorize its executive director to enter into a contract.
Right. I saw, but then they subsequently notified the treasurer that they were
They did, in fact, Your Honor, at the request of the Attorney General and as part of a peace offering to try to make things work a little better with the General Assembly, they were asked to withdraw the immediate request to disperse funds. But they never, Your Honor, undertook any action to revoke the contract. The contract remained in full force and effect, and indeed the board expressly authorized Mr. Renner to enter into that contract. So that contract remains.
Well, they authorized him to enter into a contract with any of four different entities.
Actually, Your Honor, three.
Three.
And they said that you can enter into three different arrangements with three different funds,
so this
all to one.
The specific contract the board didn't authorize.
No, Your Honor, the board expressly authorized either a contract with each of the three, or if two of the three would not participate, a contract solely with the one that would. It was expressly authorized that way.
Right. Is there any other, back to your principal point, is there any other example of the legislature of a General Assembly creating something that is irretrievable by future iterations of
the answer to that, I believe, Your Honor, is yes.
And what would that be?
That would be the state retirement funds, Your Honor. This court has previously held that the state retirement funds are trusts created outside of the state treasury, just like was used.
Is that the only one? Because the Attorney General argues that that one is really not comparable.
Well, Your Honor, I believe it's very comparable. And the reason I believe it's comparable is that there are segregated funds within each of the retirement funds that are called the Employer Accumulation Fund. Not a dime of employee money goes into that fund, but yet today PERS has $13.5 billion that the General Assembly allocated and appropriated into the Employer Accumulation Fund, and this court has held that that money is protected because it is a trust outside of the state treasury. Your Honor, if I might, that is the starting point for my analysis. This court has previously held that if the 123rd General Assembly wanted to create an irrevocable trust outside the state treasury, it had the plenary power in the year 2000 to do so. And knowing that they had the plenary power, the question becomes, what did that General Assembly intend?
And in which case stands for that proposition?
That, Your Honor, is the Preston versus Ferguson case involving the state retirement funds, that the plenary power exists. Then, Your Honor, this court, like all other courts, looks to the facts in evidence, not arguments, public policy, but the facts in evidence. And the fact in evidence here is that the 123rd General Assembly plainly intended, that's the factual finding of the trial court, plainly intended to create an irrevocable trust, putting this money beyond the reach of subsequent General Assemblies to reappropriate it. That finding of fact, Your Honor, has not been challenged either at the Court of Appeals or in this court. So
but an appropriation can only last for 2 years, can it not?
Your Honor, there is no question that an appropriation can only last during the period of the biennium of that General Assembly.
It was never then re-delivered or reappropriated.
And it didn't need to be, Your Honor. That's the point that the state keeps missing. And that is that the 123rd General Assembly had the plenary power to spend the money received during that biennium. And what happened here? They set up a trust, and then they did something very unusual. They not only appropriated the money, if you look at Section 6 of House or Senate Bill 192, they not only did what they always did, which is appropriate the money, but they took one step further. And in that one step further, they said to the director of the Department of Health, "We have appropriated this money to you. Now disperse it."
But it wasn't dispersed.
It was, Your Honor. It was dispersed to the trust at that point.
But the only one to control it is the state treasurer. So it seems, Your Honor, like the state treasurer still has to authorize the expenditure and write the checks.
No, Your Honor, that's not accurate. I'm sorry.
The trust can expend the money?
The statute that created the trust expressly says that the only party that can spend the money, once it is dispersed to the trust, is the trustees. And most importantly, Your Honor, when you look at the briefs again, you will see that the Legislative Service Commission of Ohio specifically told every legislator, not once, but about six or seven times in the various analyses that were provided to them, that if you adopt this bill, you can't appropriate the money again in the future. And secondly, only the trustees can direct its expenditure.
But they direct it by telling the state treasurer to write the checks.
There is no question, Your Honor, that the state treasurer holds the money as custodian. But it is trust money nonetheless. And there is no reason to think that a custodian holding trust money is entitled to take that trust money and use it for any purpose other than that that is imposed by the trust.
And the real issue in this case, though, isn't that holding. It's the contract that exists between that trust fund and Legacy. Am I right about that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I missed the beginning of your question.
The real issue here isn't the holding of the money. The issue is the contract existing between that trust fund and Legacy. Am I right about that?
Your Honor, with respect, I would say no.
Okay.
Here the question is, was a vested trust estate created in that money? If it was, it cannot be reappropriated to other purposes different than the trust stated, irrespective of whether there was or was not a contract with Legacy. Legacy's request, as it has done nationally, is to fight for the preservation of these funds. We're only talking about 3.5% of the $10 billion that Ohio received.
But Legacy is seeking to get that $230 million, is it not?
Your Honor, there is a additional assignment of error relating to Legacy. If this Court concludes, as we believe it should, that the trust was imposed by the adoption of Senate Bill 192 and that that money cannot be reappropriated for other purposes given the retroactivity clause of the Ohio Constitution, then whether or not Legacy is entitled to it under the contract is a second and unrelated issue.
So we've really got at least two issues.
Very separate issues.
Going to the second issue, is there consideration for the offer and acceptance between the trust fund and Legacy?
Your Honor, when you look at that contract, you will see that Legacy undertook many affirmative obligations, primarily to use that money for anti-smoking efforts in the state of Ohio. And they are specifically laid out, and as you know, a commitment by one party to undertake action is sufficient consideration to bind on the contract.
But there was no consideration paid, seems to me.
It wasn't
paid,
Your Honor.
They had an offer and acceptance, and there's no consideration because the trust still has the money.
Your Honor, if the trust has the money, then the next question is, should Legacy's contract be upheld? If the Legacy contract is upheld, there is consideration because Legacy is making affirmative commitments to the action it will take. I would like to take
Mr. Zeiger, the real question on establishing this public trust for me is whether this was the appropriate vehicle to do it through statute, or would it there is a question as to whether this should have been a constitutional amendment to insulate it from further appropriation or reappropriation down the road.
Justice Lanzinger, your question is perceptive. There is a distinction here, though, that we need to focus on. We are not talking about the appropriation of future receipts that are controlled by future General Assemblies. We are only talking about an appropriation and a disbursement of money that actually existed in the state coffers and was actually subject to appropriation by the 123rd General Assembly. I agree with you that if they had said, and the dollars that are coming in the 124th, the 125th, the 126th General Assembly, then in that case, it would have taken a constitutional amendment. But here, all they said is money that we control today, we are going to allocate to this trust because we want to make sure that that money is available in perpetuity, permanently.
Well, counsel, why cannot the same entity, the General Assembly, then pass a law to undo or to change? I'm a little troubled by the constraints that you're advocating for the General Assembly here.
Justice O'Connor, what we are talking about is the expenditure of funds during the 123rd General Assembly. I don't think we would be here today if, instead of setting up this trust, the 123rd General Assembly said, we're going to take the $250 million and we're going to give it to the Cleveland Clinic, the Ohio State University Medical Center, the Cincinnati Medical Center, and they're going to use it for exactly the same purposes. because it would have been appropriated at that point. And none of us would have thought that the 127th General Assembly could come back and take the money back from those institutions.
But the money the money disappears. It's used. Here we have the pot of money that still exists. That's the problem.
With all respect, the pot of money that still exists is a trust. It is just like that money was given to the Ohio State University. It was given to a trustee.
Your premise is that it's an irrevocable trust.
It is, Your Honor.
And you have at least two assumptions. One, that we're going to graft the law of private trust into public trust. I don't want to go to that one first. I would like to ask you, though, if this money originally went into the general fund when it came from the settlement.
Your Honor, it went into a special fund that was settlement proceeds, and then it was divided into 9 separate funds, only one of which was put outside the state treasury, only one of which was created as a trust.
But initially it was deposited into the state treasury to the credit of the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement Fund, correct?
It was, Your Honor.
Now, if it went into the general fund, it seems to me that Article 2, Section 22 would prohibit an irrevocable use of that money. You know, it says no appropriation more than 2 years, as Justice O'Donnell said. So
Your
how
Honor,
could you make that irrevocable?
Your Honor, there was, in fact, a not only appropriation, but as I tried to articulate earlier, there was a disbursement.
Well, is it a disbursement and expenditure? Are those two things?
Yes, they're the same point. It is a direction that the money be dispersed to a trustee outside the state treasury. And as you see from the amicus brief filed by former Attorney General Betty Montgomery and other people who were part of the Ohio Task Force for expenditure of the tobacco funds, it was intended by not only that task force, but by the members of the General Assembly that this money would be put outside the state treasury, would be expended, would be dispersed, as Section 6 of Senate Bill 192 says.
It seems to me we have a even more simple fundamental question we have to answer, and that is, if a General Assembly makes an appropriation of current existing funds that does not encumber future funds, but funds that they have in their treasury, is that allowable? And if we answer that question yes, then we have an answer to your question. They're maintaining that the appropriation of current funds in the current General Assembly somehow is a continuing appropriation. They seem to be putting a continuation issue on it.
And that's because, Your Honor, they're asking you to ignore the legal status of the trust. The trust was created as a separate legal entity. This Court's ruled that repeatedly. When that money was not only appropriated, but also dispersed into that trust, this Court has at least twice expressly held that upon the disbursement of that money into a trust, a vested equitable trust estate immediately arose for the benefit of the beneficiaries. So, Your Honor, as long as it is money that the 123rd General Assembly is appropriating out of its biennium, and that's what happened here, it's not out of some future biennium, it's right then. This is no different than that money having gone to the Ohio State Medical College to fight tobacco disease.
Counsel, who's the beneficiary of this trust?
Your Honor, it is specifically identified in the statute that we are talking about those Ohioans who are addicted to tobacco and need cessation, and also youth who are likely to become addicted. Those are the identified beneficiaries of the trust. Those are the people who have the vested trust rights, and those are the people who the General Assembly is currently attempting to take those vested trust rights away from.
Could that trust be modified by statute,
Your Honor,
to add beneficiaries?
Your Honor, I believe not, because the trust was established as an irrevocable trust. And therefore, I don't believe that the state has the ability to say, and oh, by the way, we want to also use the trust for jobs programs other.
How do you conclude it was irrevocable?
Your Honor,
isn't that where the real dispute between you and the state comes down? They don't dispute there was a trust. I don't think they deny that the people in the General Assembly had set this up, thought they were protecting it in perpetuity. The question is, did they and could they?
Your Honor, I think that's a perceptive question. I would say to you that it's unclear to me. The state said, yes, it's a trust. Now, in the briefs before this court, they say, well, it may not be a trust. It is a trust. That's what the statute says. The U.S. Supreme Court says the statute creates a trust.
Where do you get it's irrevocable?
Where do I get it that's irrevocable? First, by looking at the legislative intent. The actual documents by which the legislators acted, the Legislative Service Commission analyses, expressly said, if you do this, this money will not be subject to future appropriation. The only people who can spend this money are the trustees. That's what every legislator who voted for the Senate Bill 192 signed up to. So we know that the legislative intent is there. Secondly, Your Honor, the statute itself says this money shall not be part of the state treasury. Now, the argument of the state is that those words are superfluous. They are part of the state treasury.
Does the statute say the trust is irrevocable?
The word irrevocable is not used, but, Your Honor, the third point is that there are words that are used. Those words are self-sustaining and permanent endowment. That means irrevocability. And, Your Honor, there's one other point as to why it is irrevocable.
Permanent endowment just means that there's a permanent flow of dollars.
Your Honor, that's not quite right in this context, because here there is no further flow of dollars. In fact, there was an express statute
but
that says the
permanent endowment, meaning the dollars are there to spend, I guess.
An endowment is there to fund on a perpetual basis these programs. But it's a perpetual basis, and there's an express provision about self-sustaining going forward. But one other point as to why it is irrevocable. This court held as early as 1909 in the Morris case that when you construe a statute, you look to the common law, because the General Assembly is presumed to know the common law and to be incorporating it in the legislation. What the common law says without equivocation is that where a trust is created and no reservation is made of a right to reappropriate, in this case, then the trust is irrevocable. If the settlor, the state of Ohio, does not incorporate a reservation that says we can pull it back, then it is irrevocable. And that law
the
is
the common law to which you are speaking related to the General Assembly's appropriation power?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The common law of which I am speaking relates to the establishment of a trust and whether it's irrevocable.
Okay.
And it is irrevocable, Your Honor, if there is no express reservation of the right to revoke. Please note that they talk a lot about the Colorado case, the Supreme Court of Colorado. That's their principal authority. But if you look at the three statutes involved in the Colorado matter, each one of them expressly said, we're going to keep this money in the state treasury, or we're going to keep the ability to reappropriate it. Here we have a fundamental difference. We have a trust set up outside of the state treasury, and therefore there are express vested equitable trust rights in that money that cannot be interfered with under the retroactivity clause and the contracts clause of the
Ohio Constitution. But in Ohio, we've said in City of Youngstown v. Jones, it's a recognized principle. There's no such thing as an irrepealable statute because a legislature has no authority or power to bind a successive legislature. How does that holding impact your argument?
Your Honor, we are not talking about the fact that the General Assembly can't change the law. We know the General Assembly can change the law.
Can it repeal the appropriation it made in the initial instance?
If it was only an appropriation, the answer to that would be yes. Here we had something more than an appropriation. We had an actual disbursement by action of the General Assembly of the money into the hands of a trustee. Once that money reached the hands of the trustee, there was an equitable trust estate that vested instantaneously for Mr. Weinman, for Mr. Miller, for other people in that beneficiary group. And what that case that you just read to me goes on and says, of course, you can't reappropriate or undo a statute where there's a vested right that has arisen in the meantime.
Mr. Zeiger, can the General Assembly create this type of trust that you're talking about without doing violence to the idea that the General Assembly may appropriate the money? And that's where I get back to the constitutional amendment. I mean, if we had the constitutional amendment, we wouldn't be here. Would you agree with that?
If we had the constitutional amendment, we wouldn't be here, and there'd be a lot more money in the fund because it wouldn't have just been the money that was subject to the 123rd General Assembly's control. My point, simply stated, is that there is no violence done to the right of the General Assembly to appropriate if, in fact, we recognize that we're only talking about money that the 123rd General Assembly had the right to appropriate.
So, Mr. Zeiger, the going forward, we're not just going to write some law in this case. It's going to apply to all actions of whatever General Assembly
Certainly.
Comes into existence in the state of Ohio in the future for the next generations. And one now could take public monies, put them in some pockets around Ohio for transportation, for development, for whatever funding, with the Board of Trustees, and those monies would be permanently excluded from recall by a subsequent General Assembly.
Your Honor, that's exactly right. That's exactly what happened here. If the General Assembly, in this case the 123rd, decides
yes.
that's the right thing to do,
yes.
if that's the correct public policy decision,
and
then
that,
why should the 127th General Assembly be able to say, I know it was your money, I know you made the decision that it was the correct public policy, but we'd like it back now to spend it for
because
something else?
Because in Cincinnati, Youngstown versus Jones, we said you can't bind a future General Assembly.
Unless a vested trust interest arose.
So it did,
Your Honor.
The end run around the standing law is to put the money in, quote, unquote, irrevocable trusts, and then all of the money can be held in perpetuity.
And, Your Honor, that is true of the public employees' retirement funds. And if this court says you can't do that, then the employer accumulation fund of the public employee retirement funds is fair game for the General Assembly to pull back. Because that is a trust, just like this is a trust. That is a trust outside the state treasury, just like this is a trust outside the state treasury. And if this court says you can't have a trust, no matter what we said in Preston, you can't have a trust to which the General Assembly is entitled to put money and put it beyond subsequent General Assembly's ability to reappropriate, then the $13.5 billion in the public employees' retirement system, employer accumulation fund, not a dime of which came from any employee, all of which was state funds before it went there, every dime of that could be withdrawn if a future General Assembly decides that the financial exigencies of the state of Ohio require it to do so.
This is a couple of $100 million we're talking about, but Ohio is expected to receive, did I get it right, $10 billion?
That was the original estimate way back in 2000 when the task force was trying to figure out how to use the money. Only 3.5% of it was dedicated to anti-tobacco efforts on a permanent basis in the trust.
But going forward, Ohio is to receive additional dollars, am I correct?
That was true until Ohio elected by a future General Assembly to monetize those future receipts, sell them, and take the money at that point. So I don't believe, and I'm not an expert on this, but I don't believe Ohio will receive any further monies. But please understand, the money that the 123rd General Assembly put into this trust is separate and apart from any money that was received after its term in office concluded.
Mr. Zeiger, you keep referring to this as the trust that the legislature created, but didn't 18308 create the Tobacco Use Prevention and Control Endowment Fund?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what it's called in the statute. And if you look at the U.S. Supreme Court case we've cited, the Mitchell case, that case and cases that this court has subsequently also decided says that where a statute has all the elements of a trust, at that point, a statutorily created trust exists.
Well, then go back to former Revised Code 183.03, which says the Tobacco Use Prevention and Cessation Trust Fund is hereby created.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, that's a little bit of a confusion. That was the first fund
right.
into which money was poured and then appropriated out and distributed into the endowment fund.
But my point is when the legislature wants to create a trust, they know how to do it. They use
Actually,
the word.
That was not a trust, Your Honor, because it didn't meet the test of the U.S. Supreme. I know it says that, and I know that's confusing. But, Your Honor, the simple fact of the matter is a trust has to have a trustee, and there was none in that case. There is in our situation. It has to have a trust corpus. In our situation, there is a trust corpus. It has to have articulated beneficiaries. We have that. It didn't there. And it has to impose fiduciary duties on the trustee. When you have those four things, the U.S. Supreme Court has said even if you don't call it a trust, if you call it an endowment fund, it is a trust.
Was that in the context of a public trust or a private trust?
It was a statutorily created trust, Your Honor. I believe it is a public trust.
Thank you, Mr. Zeiger. You've taken a half an hour instead of 15 minutes, and so, but there were plenty of questions, and you'll get some time for rebuttal.
You're kind, and I appreciate the Court's substantial interest in this matter. It's important to everyone.
Schirmer, you will obviously have all the time you need. As long as there are questions.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
There won't be any.
I'm aware that my appropriation of time will expire, so that's okay. Your Honor, the question here is whether the money in this fund is subject to reallocation, and the answer is yes. And that is because there are only two situations in which money is restricted or off limits to the General Assembly, and neither apply here. First, the allocation of state money, state revenue, is restricted if it is subject to a constitutional limitation, such as the constitutional amendment that restricts the use of lottery proceeds for education. Second, and very intuitively, money is off limits to the General Assembly if it is not the state's money. Neither situation applies here. Ohio has never passed a constitutional amendment restricting the use of its tobacco settlement funds, as other states have, when they have wanted to ensure what the plaintiffs are asking for today, which
counsel,
is...
counsel makes a pretty strong argument that there isn't a whole lot of difference between the state-allocated part of the public employee retirement system and this trust that was created. How do you distinguish those, and how do we... How do we draft a law that says if we find in your favor that the General Assembly doesn't use then to raid the $1.7 billion sitting there?
Well, I think it's actually very, very easy because the pension fund analogy is a very poor one for plaintiffs' purposes for the tobacco fund, but it's a very good one for the single principle that the state has been putting forth that undermines every single thing that they are saying, and it is this, that this money is and has always remained the state's money because it has never been given to any entity and never placed in any fund that has any legal independence from the state. And the pension funds, Your Honor, are completely different. If you look, let's take PERS for an example. If you look at Revised Code 145.11, the General Assembly has given the retirement systems, the authority to set up the funds as separate legal entities. And that's the word that's used in 145.25, separate legal entities. So the General Assembly knows how to set up a separate legal entity when it wants to.
But if we follow your argument is that anything that you do that restricts the future ability of the next General Assembly to touch those funds is unconstitutional. So they don't have a right, if you follow your argument consistently on what they're claiming, you don't have a right to set up a separate legal entity.
Well, no, the General Assembly does have a right to set up a separate legal entity, Your Honor, but it has to set up a separate legal entity and it has to do it explicitly. And it absolutely did that with the pension funds. What you'll see in 145.11 is the authority for the systems to set up, and this is the terminology that follows, a corporation, a not-for-profit corporation, a limited liability corporation, a federal trust. All of those are legally separate entities, and that is, in fact, what the pension funds went ahead and did. They
so if you can set up a legal entity in the proper format, despite the constitutional prohibition on future bindings,
Well, you can do that.
Well, because what you are doing at that point, and it's the same thing, Your Honor, with what the General Assembly and what the revised code does with respect to our public universities, that authorizes them to form foundations, which are charitable organizations, nonprofits, usually they're 501c3s. That's the foundations for Ohio State, for Ohio University. All the public universities are registered with the Secretary of State's office. They report to the Attorney General's office. These are official, separate entities.
So your argument is not that the foundation is binding future General Assemblies. Your argument is they just didn't use the right format.
Well, the argument is that the General Assembly never created a separate entity here. And I think one thing that has been persistently confused since the inception of this case is the intent of the governor's task force when it was making up recommendations for how all of this money should be dispersed, and then the intent of the General Assembly when it was actually sitting and making a decision about what to do with the money. The state doesn't doubt and doesn't dispute the fact that it, as attested to in the amicus briefs, the recommendation of the governor's task force was for the creation of a charitable foundation to contain this money. But when you read the... Yes, sir,
I just wanted to ask you about Senate Bill 192, the 2000 bill. The heading, the end of the heading, the language at the end of the heading reads, for the biennium ending June 30th, 2002. What do you see as the significance of that language in the bill? And then if you can touch briefly on, in the context of public funds, the Barker case out of Colorado, how those funds were different or similar to the fund at issue here, and if dissimilar, how were they dissimilar, and what effect is that?
Sure. So as to your first question, Your Honor, the reason that it's titled basically a spending bill for a biennium, most of the money that was given out, that was allocated, were biennial, ordinary biennial appropriations under Section 22 that only can last a maximum of 2 years. All of the other trust funds that are listed in 192, and they are called trust funds, but they don't have any meaning in terms of a common law trust. This court.
So, I mean, are you asserting that that money then reverted back to the state on June 30th of 2002?
The money that we're talking about here, Your Honors?
Yes.
The money we're talking about here was treated in a different way. What happened was it was allocated initially.
But isn't that their point?
That is their point, but we differ on what the legal significance of the differential treatment is. The reason it was treated differently is that the money here was given first to the Director of Health, who is, of course, a state officer, so there's no change of legal ownership from the state, as a way station, because what the legislation here was also doing, of course, was setting up a state agency. There wasn't a state agency that existed at the time when this money was allocated to it. So the Director of Health gets it as a way station and then puts it into the custodial fund to service the agency once the agency is up and running. So that is the reason that the placement of the money in the custodial fund was for a period of longer than 2 years, because it wasn't actually placed there pursuant to a direct appropriation. Now, the question then is, does that somehow cause the money to metamorphosize and shed its character as state money simply by virtue of being placed in a state fund? And the answer is no. Moving money into a state custodial fund moving state money into a state custodial fund doesn't cause it to lose its character as state money. And we know that for a handful of reasons. First of all, the premise of their legal argument as to why the placement of the money makes a difference is that, well, the Treasury is only the only place that can hold state money. And we know that's not true. That was true 25 years ago when Section 113.04 used to define the Treasury as the sole place for the safekeeping of public funds. But 25 years ago, that definition was changed. And at the same exact moment that it was changed, the General Assembly authorized the creation of custodial funds. And that two-step did two things. It said, state money isn't just state money if it's in the state treasury. You can put state money also in a custodial fund. And I think going back to the question here and Justice Stratton's question about why is this different? Why can't the money from the pension funds, employer contributions be taken back? And going to the issue of the separateness of the entities, that the governor's task force, yes, recommended that a charitable foundation be created. But we have to look at the intent of the General Assembly. And we know that when it came down for the General Assembly to put pen to paper, it did not create a charitable foundation. This court knows what a charitable foundation looks like. It just created one last month, registered with the Secretary of State's office. It made itself known to the IRS. It will have reporting obligations to the Attorney General's office. What the General Assembly did here was create a state agency. 18307 called it an agency. All of its employees were public employees. It had Chapter 119 administrative agency rulemaking
power.
That's
the foundation?
That's the foundation.
Explain the relationship between the foundation and the trust, then.
Sure. The trust was a fund that was created in the state treasury. And let me start with some macro background on legislative funds, Your Honor. There are a lot of funds in the treasury, in the state treasury, that are called trusts. They're not common law trusts. It's just trust in the sense of legislatively marking the funds for a specific purpose. But all those funds that are called trusts and that are in the state treasury are always classified, treated by OBM, by the state auditor. They're always treated as ordinary governmental funds. Trust is not a common law term in that context. It's just a public law type of term. And that fits with what this court has always recognized, which is that all public officers hold office in public trust, so they're all trustees in a certain sense. And every single dollar of public money, even in the GRF, is to a certain extent in a trust.
But that's not in a common law sense. But in Revised Code 18308, the language is that the Tobacco Use Prevention and Control Fund shall be in the custody of the treasurer, but not part of the state treasury. And then it went on to say that the foundation is the trustee of that fund.
Right.
So it seemed to be placing it not in the control of the state by express language and in the control of a trustee, which I think is what Mr. Zeiger's been arguing to
right.
us.
I think you have to take a step back, Your Honor, and you have to look at who were these trustees? What was this entity that it
the
was?
The fact is it's not in the control of the state. It's in the control of a trustee, specifically the foundation, who is the trustee of the fund.
But they can't be a trustee of a fund, Your Honor, if they have no legal separation from the state. And if all they are is a state agency, and that is all they are and that is all they ever have been, they are not a legally separate entity. They are not the charitable organizations that are founded by the universities to create their endowments.
The point is the foundation isn't a trustee. It's a state agency.
It is a state. Absolutely. It is a state agency through and through. And it always considered itself a state agency and has been treated by a state agency. And so that brings us back to Justice Stratton's.
So your argument is not so much that the Constitution prohibits the legislature from binding future funds. They just used the wrong entity to create it. They did not create an entity that could segregate those future funds like
the pension. What we are saying,
fund.
Your Honor, is that the Constitution does not prohibit the General Assembly from giving up ownership of state funds by transferring them to a separate legal entity. There is no separate legal entity here. All we have is a state-to-state transaction. It's apples to apples. And if you actually were to take a step back, and if you were to hold that this was somehow
you're
a fund,
saying that the state does have the ability, creating the right legal instrument, to permanently give up state funds.
It does, but it has to create actually a legal instrument, a corporation, an LLC.
That seems to be contrary to a lot of the legal arguments that you made in your brief, that they can't bind you, they can't bind you, they can't bind you. Your theory, if they create the correct legal entity. And so then we have to determine, is this a correct legal entity to which it can be bound.
I think you do have to determine that, and it's true that the money that they can't be bound. If all we have is a transaction that's from the state to another arm of the state, then we have a state-to-state transaction. We don't have any kind of a trust because we have no legal separation in terms of the identities of the giver, the settlor, and the receiver. So the keystone principle of trust law, common law trust law, is that the settlor, in this case they're saying it's the state, is giving up ownership, giving up title to the money to somebody else who will hold that money in trust and be a trustee of the money.
So if you are agree not giving that it, one legislature can take money, put it into a proper trust, irrevocable, and set it aside, subject to trustee control, and no future legislature can retrieve that money?
What I'm saying is that if the
general— Are you saying conceivably that can be done or not?
No, because at that point, the General Assembly is not setting aside money. It is giving away the money to a different legal entity. Just as Mr. Zeiger was saying, if the General Assembly gave away money to the Cleveland Clinic, it could give a grant. It could give a grant to one of the university endowments. That money can't be taken back. It can make employer contributions to the pension funds, which are legally separate entities. They are IRS Section 415 separate legal entities. They are separate from the state. And when the employer makes a contribution there, it is exactly that, a contribution. A contribution occurs when you give up ownership to something. There is no ownership here. And if Your Honors take a step back and take this out of the state context for a minute, and we take whatever the common law trust principles that would be formed, if you find, for the other side here, what you would have then back in the private context is we're all going to be willing to ignore the unity of the entities here. We're going to say it somehow became a trust and was put in trust because the General Assembly wanted it to be made permanent, well, then what you are doing is sanctioning money laundering. That is exactly how people in the private realm use trusts to launder money. They have a unity of the entities. There's actually no separate legal ownership that's really being given over. They just want to keep the money off limits from other people, like the IRS.
Ms. Shermer, you're confusing me because I thought the issue here was whether the General Assembly could create an untouchable fund. Okay, an untouchable fund, and under the briefs that we read here, the idea was, well, with a constitutional amendment, because then the people would be saying, yes, this money is untouchable, not subject to reappropriation by any other General Assembly. And now you're stating that, well, if they had created a charitable foundation and done that as a separate vehicle, that would have been okay. That was another way to do it. Am I understanding you correctly, that there are two ways, not just one?
Well, there is one way to make state money that is always state money irrevocable. That's a constitutional amendment. That's exactly what we're saying. But if the General Assembly were to create a separate, the General Assembly, I can't think of an instance so much where the General Assembly is creating a separate entity. What it does is authorized the arm of the state.
You're talking PERS.
To do it, PERS, right. Which is authorizing the systems to create the separate entity. And same thing with the universities. The universities are authorized to create the separate entities. That's the way the General Assembly does it. It gives the power to the independent entity to form a separate entity. And for the record, Your Honor, the General Assembly did that in 2007 with the tobacco agency here, that after the securitization of the money, which meant that the money that would be given to the agency would be reduced over the years. What the General Assembly did in 2007 was authorize the agency to create a nonprofit to raise money for its permanent use. If this entity were already some sort of a separate legal entity, there would be no reason for a General Assembly to create a legal entity.
Counsel, I'm having the same difficulty that Justice Lansinger is having with this. In your brief, you compare these funds and their treatment to what we know as Rotary funds, which the difference between that and a general appropriation would be, in a general appropriation, if you don't spend it, it lapses back into the general pot. And any of the Rotary funds that various boards and agencies have, and there are all kinds of them, if they have money left over, it doesn't lapse. It stays in their Rotary fund. And that's the comparison you made, is it not, to this fund?
Well, the comparison we're making about this fund is that this fund, by being placed in a custodial fund, all a state custodial fund means when you put state money in a custodial fund is that it simply marks a difference in how unspent.
But here
money
they did
treated.
Call it a trust. And in some part of your brief, then you, Mr. Zeiger, get into a dispute as to whether or not it was irrevocable. Certainly, I don't think you dispute that the members of the General Assembly back when this was set up viewed it as a trust. Some, maybe most, maybe all, thought they had made it untouchable by future legislators. They might have thought that and been dead wrong because there are significant constitutional barriers to doing that. But today now you're arguing, well, there is a way.
No, and
I'm wondering what example is there where the General Assembly actually took state dollars. Now, you give the example of the university's fundraising. That's off limits and all of that. Or this court's creation of a trust to accept donations for future enhancement of art and the building, that kind of thing. But that's to receive private money. In the case of the universities or in the case of this court or anything else. What are the examples where the General Assembly is putting state funds, which is, Judge Harsha points out, these became state funds when they initially came in, into a unreachable private trust or or whatever you want, or foundation, whatever you want to call it. What would be an example of the General Assembly having done that?
I don't know of any example in which the General Assembly has done it, because it can't.
Well, then
do it,
aren't you reaching too far? It seems to me you're too troubled by Mr. Zeiger's argument that this is no different than PERS or any of the retirement funds. It seems to me there are ways to distinguish that without having to worry about that. This way of doing it that you've conjured up is never been done by the General Assembly. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the way that I think it really happened here has never been done and is not allowed. And maybe I can just address what seems to be the point of confusion. There is no confusion. Our brief is the premise of our brief is that this was a state-to-state transaction, that this was not a separate trust, that it was created as a state agency, and that the money was given over to a state agency. At that point, our argument is absolutely. The General Assembly cannot then step back and say, it can't use any magic words and say, this is a permanent fund. That violates the plenary power of the General Assembly. What I am trying to point out, though, so that there is no confusion and that so the court doesn't mistakenly think that somehow this legislation did do something properly, is to say that the proper way, if the state wants to put some money, dedicate money to a particular purpose, absent a constitutional amendment, is there has to be a separate legal entity. It has to give it away. All we have here
but
is
you never know. You have no knowledge of them ever having done
I have no knowledge
of the state ever having done that.
Well, it never did it here, but it has authorized state agencies.
Okay, but I mean, other than this case,
yeah.
Is there any other example in the history of the state where they did that? They took state funds and put them.
No, and Your Honor, that's because you can't, and that gets into the plenary power problem, which is.
Well,
that
can I say this about that specific point? Because your alternative theory here of how the state could do this suggests that public funds can be deposited in an irrevocable trust, and that's one of, I think, the threshold questions we have, isn't it? Whether or not public funds can be used in a charitable trust like this.
Well, if the charitable trust is a separate legal entity from the state, in that case, that trust, whether
so you don't have any problem with public funds being placed into an irrevocable charitable trust.
No.
Just a question of whether they did it properly.
No, it would be the same thing. In my view, Your Honor, in the state's view, if the General Assembly had truly succeeded in creating a separate legal entity or in authorizing the agency to create a separate legal entity, that separate legal entity is as separate as the Cleveland Clinic is. And so giving away state funds to that separate legal entity, whether it's created by the state agency or whether it's the Cleveland Clinic, gives away that money.
Counsel,
is Legacy such an institution?
I'm sorry.
Is American Legacy such an institution, independent?
It is, but for a number of other reasons, namely the Open Meetings Act violation, the entity here did not succeed in communicating those funds to that entity, and there were a number of other problems with the contract that invalidated the contract as well that aren't before the court on appeal, but that the trial court found invalidated the contract. But yes, was there some conceivable way that this entity could have given away the money to the Legacy Foundation?
So if we find there was no problem with the open records, this money could have been given to American Legacy.
No, it couldn't have, because there was an Open Meetings Act violation that wasn't. If you find that it wasn't, no, it couldn't have, because there are three other reasons that the contract was invalid, as we've explained in our brief, and they're not before the court. But basically, in this particular contract, it wasn't a contract. It was basically the entity, the tobacco agency, was giving up its fiduciary duties, which is impermissible. It did not follow state contracting law. There are a handful of very, very clear and obvious violations with that contract that render it invalid. And the trial court, which was not favorable to the state in any other respect, found all of that invalid very easily here. And so let me go to the point about the irrevocability of the money. There's no question that the people of Ohio can take state money and encumber it through a constitutional amendment as it's done with the lottery. But what the plaintiffs are asking for here, to recognize that a state-to-state transaction, giving money to a state agency that's not a legally separate entity, that's not giving up ownership, that somehow that is creating a permanent fund, That is impermissible, and there is no court in this country that has ever found it permissible for a General Assembly to place state money permanently beyond the reach of future lawmakers while not giving up ownership of it, by keeping it in state, just giving it to a state agency or putting it in a fund. Basically, the shorthand of it is there are no, absent a constitutional amendment, there are no lockboxes for state money.
Council,
you have to give it away.
All right, I have a question. If the appellant here is correct that these dollars went to the foundation and that created the trust, and then the trust can use that money to flow to legacy, fund legacy and contract with them, the point where you differ is that if the foundation was never created as a trust, in other words, the dollars that were placed in that foundation never took on the identity of a separate entity and therefore a trust, then those dollars, since they have not been dispersed as of yet, can be pulled back.
Exactly.
Is that basically what we're talking about?
That's exactly it. It's just an apples-to-apples transaction. I'm the state. I'm giving it to an arm of the state.
Okay. Now, if we say that money, for want of a better illustration, remained with the state, and then the state entered into the contract with legacy, you would agree that if we find that contract valid, that arrangement, that money is gone and resides now with legacy for the terms of the contract?
There are a lot of things that depends on. The state doesn't dispute the fact that this agency that the General Assembly could have given the money as grants. It did give grants. But to enter into a contract, there was the violation of the Open Meetings Act. There were all the other grounds on which the contract was invalid.
So the vehicle that was utilized to transfer the money from the state to legacy, you challenge. But you don't challenge the ability for the state to contract with legacy for the use of these, millions and millions of dollars.
That too depends. We don't. What the agency was trying to do here was basically say, we're riding off into the sunset. You do our job. So it was giving away its fiduciary duties. You can't do that. If you want to fund a program, somebody comes into the state, wants to run an anti-smoking program for kids. They file a grant proposal.
So you're saying
they're
you can't make a one-time disbursement of the $190 million and just say it's yours and
you can as long as it's a proper type of grant and it's not saying it's yours, take on all of our fiduciary duties. It can't be that kind of a transaction.
I mean, the state can subcontract for its services.
It can do it for its services, but not for its fiduciary duties, such as making discretionary decisions about what types of programs to fund and so forth. So I guess the short of it is, Your Honor, is that we don't dispute the fact that this agency had the authority to give grants. And if your question is there some conceivable way that the agency here could have gone about and found a way to craft a contract and write all the specific duties just so in a way that wasn't violating all statutes that are giving away fiduciary duties and so forth and could have given away the money, yes, but there are about 10 ifs in there that haven't been met and that the trial court found were not met that invalidate the contract. And let me just look forward into the future of what happens if the court here finds that this money was some sort of was made a permanent fund, even though all it was ever done was given to a state agency. The problem that we have here are manyfold. First of all, what we're doing is we're saying that the General Assembly, through statutory law, can now create constitutional law. Our constitutions are where the law enshrines pre-commitments and makes things permanent. And if you say that the General Assembly here could make an allocation of money to another state entity and just slap the word trust on it and say it's permanent, even though it was never made a separate legal entity, what you're doing is saying that the General Assembly can do by fiat what is only allowed to happen through the constitutional process.
The General Assembly, any iteration of the General Assembly, does bind future General Assemblies in a number of ways. When they fund a project with debt, capital improvements, every subsequent iteration of the General Assembly has to appropriate monies for debt service, don't they? The good credit of the state of Ohio would disappear.
I think the debt context, I think, is different and subject to its own constitutional issues, and that's different. But no, the General Assembly can't. It always retains — that's the whole point of plenary power. The General Assembly always retains the power to amend or repeal its laws, including its fiscal legislation. That's what the court said in Griffith. And therefore, if it is state money, meaning if it never left the state's ownership or control to a private entity or to some other — to a private entity that was independently set up or to a private entity that was set up by the state, if it never left the state's control, it cannot be a permanent fund, and it cannot be rendered off limits. The other problem that we have here is a question of remedy. And if you want to know what it looks like to say that money given to a state agency somehow has a soul and an afterlife that lives on after the agency is gone, we just have to look to the trial court's opinion in page 15 of the final judgment and what the remedy was here, which is that the trial court appointed itself the executor of this fund and was standing in the shoes of the defunct agency and literally said that people should come to the court in perpetuity and submit applications for running anti-tobacco programs, and the court will give out the money. So what this means, if you do recognize that the General Assembly can create some fund and call it permanent, is that you're going to have ongoing judicial management and you're going to have a lone trial court that's going to be sitting effectively as a state agency. And the other problem we have is what happens if you do find that it's a permanent fund? Well, as the trial court did, the inquiry isn't over there because these plaintiffs are bringing constitutional contract clause claims, and so would all the other plaintiffs in the future who are wanting to say that state money has been permanently dedicated somewhere. So then you have to put the irrevocable — sorry, Your Honor.
So would you disagree with Mr. Zeiger that this was a disbursement and an expenditure at the time?
Correct. This was not any kind of a disbursement at all. When you put money into a custodial fund, all it is, the difference between putting money into a state custodial fund or a treasury fund simply marks a difference in how unspent monies are treated. With money from a treasury fund, the money automatically lapses. It automatically reverts to the big pot for reappropriation, automatic appropriation in the next budget cycle.
What happens to money once it goes in the state treasury? Can it ever come out into a custodial account and not be subject to the two-year appropriation limit?
No, Your Honor. If this money were directly appropriated from the Treasury into a custodial fund, that would be subject to the two-year limitation and it would revert. But if we didn't have that here, what we had was the money was – it did a hopscotch because the director
– So you're laundering again.
Well, I think that would be a separate question, Your Honor. I don't think that that's what happened here, but to the extent that the court finds that there is a problem with it, it is a certain sidestep of Section 22 appropriations process. I can concede that. But if the court finds that problematic, all it means is that the money here couldn't be expended beyond 2 years, let alone.
1310, Revised Code 1310 sets up a contingent fund that says if you don't know where to put the money, you don't have a place to put the money, you can put it in this contingent fund. Or you could create a custodial account prior to the funds going into the state treasury. But once they get into the state treasury, it seems to me that Article 2, Section 22 locks it into the two-year appropriation period.
I don't think that's right, Your Honor, if they are able to put the money into the custodial fund in a way that's not through a direct appropriation. And I concede, Your Honor, that it's possible that —
No, but if it comes by direct appropriation, how do you get around the two-year limitation?
Because the money will have left.
So you do two appropriations.
The money will have left the person that The money will have left the person that it was appropriated to within the 2 year period, and it will have been put into the custodial fund. And it may be that in some future case that the court would examine this issue of a sidestep of the Section 22 process. But all it would mean if the court were to examine it here is that this this transfer of the money into the custodial fund couldn't extend beyond 2 years. So it certainly couldn't have been forever at that point.
Ms. Sherman, let me ask it a different way. Can the General Assembly constitutionally create an irrevocable trust?
No.
Can it?
No, it cannot. It can create a separate entity that it can authorize to create some separate legal entity that holds money, and it can call that a trust. But no, the General Assembly cannot take state money, give it to a state agency, and call it an irrevocable trust. No, it absolutely cannot. And the other problem, again, that we see from this is that, as we saw with the trial court here, You would have to put that inquiry, if you find it's a permanent fund somehow, that inquiry would then have to go through the necessity prong of the contracts clause analysis, as the trial court did below. And as you can see on pages 50 to 52 of the plaintiff's appendix and page 88, what that contracts clause analysis looks like. The trial court said, well, the necessity prong says, well, as the trial court said, I find that this money was in a permanent fund, and now I have to ask whether it was really necessary for the court to take the money from the tobacco fund in order to fund the economic stimulus programs. And what that analysis looked like on those pages, Your Honor, is a trial court that's saying, well, maybe the General Assembly could have issued general obligation bonds, or maybe the General Assembly could have applied for federal stimulus money. In fact, why have a state stimulus program altogether since the federal program dwarfs it? That's what the trial court was saying here, Your Honors. And so what you then get is a trial court that is making these kinds, second-guessing these types of policy decisions. And the question of whether the General Assembly is funding anti-smoking programs that would prevent lung cancer, as it did initially, or whether it's funding breast cancer screenings for low-income women, as has now been reallocated, is not a question that has a right answer. Whether it's running programs, anti-smoking programs for kids, as it used to, or it's supplying low-income kids with Medicaid coverage, as it now is going to do, doesn't have a right answer. Those are policy decisions. And so to put them through the meat grinder of the necessity prong of the contracts clause analysis as if they have some kind of a right answer is inappropriate, that they are policy decisions and they're meant for the legislature.
I think we've given you enough time.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We'd urge
the court to affirm the judgment of the 10th District.
Presentation, Mr. Zeiger. You'll get your 3 minutes. And
thank you very much, Justice Pfeiffer. I think oral argument sometimes doesn't hone the issues, but I think today it did. And you have heard a remarkable admission by the state, and that is that if a separate legal entity had been created to receive this $250 million, then the 123rd General Assembly had the plenary power to take that money, appropriate it, and then order it dispersed. So the issue before you comes down to one proposition. Was a separate legal entity created? Before I answer that, let's understand why the state had to go where it went. For the very same reason I said in my oral argument, the state has $13.5 billion in the Employer's Accumulation Fund of PERS. It has billions of other public funds in the Employer Accumulation Funds of the four other retirement systems. If, in fact, the state had taken the position that you could not create an outside entity and you could not distribute money to it, then all of that money would have been at risk of future appropriation. And it's for that very simple reason that we now come back to the fundamental issue. Was a separate legal entity created? Well, for whatever reason...
Their argument seems to be, and I'm trying to understand it, is that if OSU created a foundation, then the General Assembly could give money to it. But the General Assembly itself couldn't have created that foundation.
I believe that's the state's argument, and I believe it's wrong.
But my question then is, OSU is a public institution, so why can another public institution do it? And I guess I got lost on that argument.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that's the state's argument, that the state can't create this entity. Just stick with me for 1 second. The state has said if a separate legal entity is created, the money could pour over into it and not be subject to reappropriation later. We agree on that. So the real question is there a separate legal entity? And when you consider that question, I hope you will look back at the common law of trusts, which has existed both in England and this country for 500 years or more. Because a trust is a separate legal entity. Yes, you could set up a foundation, you could set up an LLC, all the things that were identified, but you can also set up a trust. And a trust is a separate legal entity. There's not a single ruling of this court or any other court that a trust is not a separate legal entity. Now,
well,
how do we know?
The argument is that they didn't appropriately set up a trust. It's not that the state couldn't set up a trust, as I think the response was that the pension funds are created through a correctly set up trust set up by the state.
What?
Where the foundation was not that type of an animal.
Your Honor, let's be clear. We're not talking about the foundation. We're talking about the endowment fund. And the question is, as you correctly state, is the endowment fund a trust? Was it established as a trust?
And their argument is it's just, it's all in the same pair of pants. The state is just different pockets.
Well, Your Honor, those different pockets have legal consequences, as this court understands. Please understand that there is a trust. How do we know that? Because the United States Supreme Court in the Mitchell case said you look to see if there is a trustee. And if you look at the statute, 18308 expressly says that the foundation is the trustee of these monies.
And the argument is that they're all state people. They're all state entities. It's the state moving from the left pocket to the right pocket, but it's still the state that owns it.
Okay, Your Honor, you will see in our briefs that the courts of this state, and I believe this court, at least the 10th District, has expressly held that each of the pension funds is a state agency. So the simple fact that a state agency exists and is made a trustee does not eliminate a trust. The question is there a trustee? Yes, it may be a state agency. In the case of the retirement funds, it's been held that they are state agencies. Is there a trust corpus? Yes, the money that was, and there was some suggestion that this money was not appropriated and then dispersed, if I understood counsel's argument correctly. I hope you'll take just a second and look at Section 6 of Senate Bill 192. And here's what it says. After it makes the appropriation, the General Assembly said, and the appropriation was to the Department of Health. The next sentence, the Director of Health shall disperse monies appropriated in this appropriation item to the Tobacco Use Prevention and Control Endowment Fund, the trust, created by Section 18303.
Counsel,
the money was dispersed to the trust fund.
Counsel, been generous with your 3 minutes. You're up to six. Let's go back to what you want. You want the Court of Appeals reversed and affirm the trial court.
I do, Your Honor.
And does that mean the trial court then manages this fund?
Your Honor, the trustee of the fund has been eliminated by the legislative enactment. We understand that. The Ohio Trust Code specifically says that where there is no provision for a successor trustee, the court has the ability to appoint a successor trustee. There was some suggestion that Judge Feist plans to control this money in perpetuity. No, no, no. The state repeatedly asked for disbursements so they could pay bills for the existing program. That's what the judge said he would continue. But if this court does, in fact, do what we believe, which is say there was a trust established and that vested trust rights arose, and that in that context you cannot then take those trust rights away without having unconstitutional retroactive legislation, in that context, then one of two things has to happen. Either the General Assembly has to create a new trustee or appoint a new trustee, or the court does. But irrespective, the money is impressed with the trust to take care of Mr. Weinman and Mr. Miller and the people who were designated as the trust beneficiaries. One last point about what we request. There was some suggestion in Justice O'Connor's question that somehow or other what we're saying is that not only is a trust impressed, but then the money has to come to legacy. The issues are separate and apart. If the trust is impressed and a vested trust estate arose, and the law of this court in two Supreme Court decisions says it did when the money was dispersed, if we're right on that, the money is trust money and it sits there. There is a separate question as to whether there is a legal contract with Legacy that a portion of that trust money goes to Legacy. But fundamentally, what we are asking is that this court recognize that the 123rd General Assembly had the plenary power to create this fund outside the state treasury, just like the retirement monies, and just like the retirement monies, it cannot be reappropriated after the fact.
Thank you, Mr. Zeiger.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the courtesies.
Marshal will adjourn court.